Okay. So like everyone else, I'm going to try and raise my voice, and hopefully all of you can hear me. I'm Sean Coffey. I work with the Java Platform Group team in the Dublin Oracle office. And today I'd like to talk about the JDK flight recorder events and how they can be used to monitor security operations on your Java applications. For those that mightn't be familiar with the JDK flight recorder, I'm just going to give a quick overview of it. It's better known as the JFR. It's a low-cost monitoring and profiling framework that's, you know, ships with the JDK, embedded directly into the JVM, ready for production use, and would typically have a 1% overhead. There are many different events from all over the JVM stack and APIs that are gathered into a JFR recording, and they're the building blocks of the data that this framework outputs, and they would typically be captured to a JFR file. There's other options to stream it elsewhere, but for the purpose of this presentation, I'm just going to concentrate on the JFR file that gets captured at the local file system level. Traditionally, the JFR would be used to capture low-level events, very low-level events in the JVM. Everything from memory, like memory allocation, memory retention, GC, threading, maybe deadlocks that you might have on your application. They can all be studied in great detail using JFR and have been very successful in doing that over the years. In more recent times, I guess, there's been more and more events added to the JFR stack that allow developers that use the security and core library APIs to monitor in more detail what events are being captured at their application level. And I'm going to concentrate on some of them today, in particular the security crypto events. Before we go there, I just want to have a few notes on how the JFR can be launched into your Java application. It's quite a trivial task. There are a few different options. I'm going to highlight some of the main ones here. The most common way is probably via the command line. You insert an extra VM option, -xx, colon, start flight recording, and that will automatically have the JFR start recording your application at launch time. That command itself takes sub options. One option I have here is dump on exit equals true, which basically signals to the JFR to write out all the events that have been captured to the file on VM exit. Another way of capturing JFRs is via jcommand or jcmd. This is a utility that ships in the JDK. As someone that works with support and enterprise teams, this is a very powerful kind of attraction of JFR, being able to remotely dial into any JDK via jcmd via the PID identifier. There's a diagnostic command called jfr.start that will basically start recording events at any time during the lifetime of your Java application. There's follow-on events then to actually dump that JFR data and to stop the JFR recording via jcmd as well. And of course, there's also the good old graphical tools to fall back into these actions as well. Java Mission Control, better known as JMC, is a tool very capable of working with JFR by launching it and reading JFR data. It can do a whole lot of different diagnostic options on running JVMs. Starting the JFR is one of those. Let's just look at a high level at some of the core library and security events that are in the JDK today. I'm just going to highlight some of them. JDK.deserialization was introduced in JDK 17. No surprises here, it records details about objects being deserialized in your application. That can be useful to developers to know what sort of shapes and maybe heuristics and load a deserialization process is putting on your VM per object. The JDK.processStart was brought in 15. Records details around use of the process builder and processes being started there. And again, that's useful to developers or, you know, DevOps or end engineers that need to know what sort of native processes are being triggered by this API. JDK.virtualThreadStart, JDK.virtualThreadEnd came in 19 as part of the Loom preview. And they will capture details of, you know, no surprises again, every virtual thread start and stop and the calling stack to those. JDK.shutdown, since JDK 11, captures details around use of the system.exit API. Mightn't be of interest to everyone, but it's a good example of that tricky moment where your JVM or your application unexpectedly dies. Some part of the application is called system.exit. It can often be hard to track down that case. JFR will do a good job of doing that. JDK.initial environment variable has been in the stack for a long time. Thought it was worthy of highlighting here. Environment variables have a behavioral change on the JVM that's running. It's often a very useful event to capture the details, all of the environment details about the shell or the environment that the JVM is running in. And finally, security crypto events have been added since Java 12. I'm going to go into more detail on those very shortly. I will add that most of these events have been backported to the various JDK update releases. Before I talk about crypto events, let's just look at the motivation for why we did this. They're basically there to help you monitor security configuration and the actions of the Java runtime on that end. You know, you might often wonder what sort of cryptographic standards and algorithms are running on your VM and are they secure? Having the JFR there and allowing one to remotely attach to these JDKs and collect this data is a pretty attractive capability. So, and it also helps, the Oracle run the JDK crypto roadmap program where we try and keep the JDK secure out of the box. For people that mightn't be familiar with that program, basically security standards evolve over the years. Some become weaker. A good example might be TLS v1.1. 10 years ago, a lot of our internet and TLS traffic was working with that protocol. Today, it would be regarded as weak, deprecated, and the crypto roadmap program would have been part of the steps of ensuring that TLS 1.1 was disabled in the JDK by default. The program itself publishes a roadmap of upcoming changes that helps developers assess whether future changes might impact their applications. And of course, the binary nature of JFR files is a very attractive setup as well, and helps engineers run efficient queries over large data stacks. Okay, let's go over the crypto events. There are six in the stack today. JDK.security property modification, JDK.TLS handshake, JDK.X509 certificate, JDK.X509 validation, and the two more recent ones, they were all added in JDK 12. Two more recent ones in Java 20 were JDK.initial security property and JDK.security provider service. You will notice that most of these are disabled by default, and so it's up to the end user to enable them via the configuration file. And again, many of these events have been backported to the various JDK update releases. On the note of enabling JFR crypto events, it's actually a trivial enough task. Again, it's a configuration step. The default file that the JFR will use is in the JDK itself. It's in the JDK home lib JFR directory. There is another file in the same directory called profile.jfc. That is there to ratch up the number of events and the data collected in the running JVM for those moments where you might need to home in on a problem application. You can also specify the configuration file when you're starting and launching JFR. I've included an example here of where the settings command can be used to indicate where the configuration file is located. The same can be done in the graphical tools very easily. The configuration file itself is of XML format. And it's quite easy. You can do it through the graphical tools, or you can do it through just file edits. It's quite easy to flip any disabled event over to the true status. So let's walk through those events. I'd like just to highlight the data points that each event captures and why they may be useful. For those not familiar with JFR, I'm using the CLI tool that ships in the JDK. It's again in the JDK home bin directory, and it's capable of parsing JFR files and taking options to delve into certain events of interest in that file. The first one up here is security property modification. That records details of all API calls to the security.setProperty API. Given that the JVM, you know, security, you know, behavior is impacted by security properties, it's important to perhaps capture such details going on at the VM level. As part of a JFR event, one gets the stack trace and the event time. The extra events here on top of that are the event data, I should say, is the key and the value. Very, very simple event in itself. Let's move on to the next one, JDK.TLS handshake. This records details of every successful TLS handshake made by the default JSSE provider. Quite a powerful event perhaps for admins and audits where one needs to know about every outgoing TLS connection being made. And indeed, the same is true for servers receiving requests. They get to record the JFR event as well. The interesting event fields in this event are perhaps the peer host, the peer host port, the protocol version in use, the cipher suite, the certificate ID, which would be a reference to the server certificate, and again the calling stack trace, which can help anyone identify where those connections are coming from. JDK.X509 certificate, no surprises here, records details of every cert that's generated at the JVM level. The interesting fields here would be the serial number of the cert, the subject of the cert, who issued that certificate, the signature type on the cert, the key length, and I think the signature algorithm is also captured, and the all-important validity of the certificate, so valid from, valid to. I think we've all seen services over the years, major services at that, which may have failed because of a mismatch in dates or an expired certificate. This may be a useful kind of data event to capture to help auditors know, or DevOps know, if there's any upcoming certs that need modification. JDK.X509 validation. This event records details around the successful cert path operations. So it's coupled closely with the X509 certificate event, and for those familiar with TLS, there's a chain of trust that has to be built for every successful connection, starting with the server certificate. A chain of trust has to be built all the way back to the client, which will have hopefully a root certificate, a certificate from a root certificate authority that matches the request coming in. This is basically an event to capture those details. It captures the certificates used and the position of where that certificate was in the successful TLS connection. Position one being the server certificate, and the last position being the root CA. You'll often find that there's intermediate certificates in play here as well. JDK.initial security property. This was added in Java 20. And what it basically is a binary dump of all the security properties that are in the Java security file at startup. Again, as someone that works on helping enterprises and debug situations, it's very useful to know if an application has made modifications in this area. Being able to capture all those security details, security property details, and dump them out to a JFR file is quite useful. So once someone can couple this event with the earlier JDK security modification event, you have a good picture of what an application is doing at the security property level. Final event, possibly one of the more useful events, I believe, is the JDK.security provider service. That is sitting at the JCA layer, and it captures every event coming into every provider in terms of crypto requests. And the fields of interest here are the type of service being requested, the algorithm on that service, and the provider. And again, the calling stack trace. Quite a powerful bit of data to have if you're perhaps debugging a cryptographic issue or a CPU issue or bad bad crypto operation that's gone wrong. This can be useful data to indicate what providers and what layers were at play. Let's take this one into a bit more detail. I have a graphical format of this event. This is a snapshot from the JMC tool that I spoke about earlier, Java Mission Control. As we can see here, we have a view of the different types of service, the different number of accounts that was made, and the events, you know, timestamps and the event data in each one of those. More interesting for this kind of event is the fact that you can group this data. There's a group by feature in JMC, and that probably is of more interest for security developers, where the typical request coming into the JCA provider framework will be, you know, a request for a certain service, but a certain algorithm name within that service. So here we can see that the SHA-256 message digests are you know, in high demand. The X509 certificate factory, no surprises here. This was just a simple demo app that is making several different TLS connections. And the list goes down. Every single crypto operation made by your application is recorded by this event. Given that a stack trace can be associated with each one of these events, we're now in a position to know where every crypto call is actually coming from. And again, very useful for determining the source of crypto requests. And let's tie that one back to the crypto roadmap then. So with the events that I've just spoken about, I'm hoping people can see how they can use those events now to actually gauge whether upcoming events in the crypto roadmap impact their applications or not, and in fact, even past changes. I'm going to take a few examples here. These are the most recent ones that were in the roadmap as of a week or two ago. Back in October 24, we took the decision to disable the TLS ECDH cipher suites by default. It was already done in the JDK feature releases, but it's been, you know, extended to update releases. The second one here, we began distrusting TLS server certificates issued by the Intrust Authority. And, you know, all this information is publicized via the roadmap in a good time frame. And the third one is disabling of DTLS 1.0 that was done earlier in 2024. With those events that we just saw, I'm hoping that people can now match the kind of data items up with an actual event that can be used to understand whether their applications will be impacted. So the first one here, we can use TLS Handshake. Since it records a cipher suite, we can do a very simple query and match on JDK.x509 certificate. You can basically scan every certificate that's being generated and query on the issuer field and pick out certificates that might be of of impact in this line item. And the lastly, the disabling of DTLS 1.0, again, we fall back to the TLS Handshake event. We can very easily look at the protocol version and find problem applications that might be still using DTLS 1.0. They're probably more trivial cases. Let's look at a slightly more complex case. I've chosen this one, which was made in October 22. The JDK itself ships with the ability to create key stores. By default, they use the PIKAS-12 format. Some of the internal algorithms inside the generation of a key store, they're not well exposed. They're hard to see in the bug logs. But the MAC algorithm used for creating key stores was upgraded with this line item. And that was, you know, for an end user, that's hard to determine. It's hard to determine whether, you know, the key stores that are in use by the applications would actually be impacted or would be a factor in this change. So let's just delve into a bit more detail on this one. We're going to use the security provider service to determine whether applications are actually using weak key stores or not. So here, I've turned on crypto, the provider service event for this application. We have a simple algorithm called MAC request with the algorithm of HMAC PBE SHA-1. By itself, that might look okay. You know, applications are allowed to pull whatever service is being offered out of the provider layer. But if you can couple that with the actual stack trace, we're now in a more interesting position. We know that using weak the weak algorithm on a key store is no longer deemed appropriate. And we now have evidence that this Java application is after loading from a weak key store. So one can deduce that that's a weak crypto operation, and you know, action should be taken for applications that might have interest in this area. On the flip side, I have another key store in use by the same application here. We see that the algorithm this time is HMAC-PB SHA-256 with a very similar stack trace. That's evidence of a key store that actually has been generated with stronger crypto from the get-go, and that can be considered more safe. On a final note, Oracle have the Java Management Service, which is using these JFR events today. They are able to observe and manage JDK deployments. There's a crypto roadmap impact analysis as part of that product, which is using the JFR events that I've just highlighted, coupled with kind of a rule book that will determine what's good crypto and what is bad crypto. And it also has the ability to, you know, advise the end users what the best course of action would be in terms of correcting any sightings of weak crypto in their application. And that's pretty much it for today. I'm just going to quickly show the Java mission control and where one can find these. That's not in your window. That's going to be tricky. Let me just do a quick change here. Okay, so hopefully you can see JMC here. So on a normal launch of a JFR recording, you will get automated analysis at the very front pane. One is able to delve down through the various events that are captured as part of a JFR recording. If one is interested in the crypto events themselves, they can go to the event browser. There's a kind of a tree effect where each event is recorded under a certain component. The crypto events themselves fall in under the Java development kit and security. And here, one can literally just take a view of every event that's being generated at that level, associated with a calling stack trace as well, which can be handy for identifying problem issues. That's about it from me. If you have any questions, I'm happy to take them now, or we can. More than happy also, we can discuss on security-dev at openjdk.org. Volker?
Is there a JFR event for remote detach?
Remote detach? There could be.
It's more security relevant.
It's a fair point. You know, this is only the start of some of the events at the higher level. I think we are getting more and more conscious of adding events for these kind of remote operations. Yep. Sorry, Volker was asking, was there a JFR event for remote detach, I believe, is it? From the JFR side or the yeah. Anything else? No. Oh, sorry.
Do you trace scheduling events for threads?
I guess that would be at the JFR level for JVM events itself.
When a thread starts running and stops running at the OS level.
Yeah, I believe so. On the JFR JVM level, this is only a snapshot of what the JFR can do at the security API level, but at the JVM level, there's a much more detailed view of each thread and their state. But definitely worth checking out. Okay, thank you.